You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
All right, bud. You are recording. Whenever you're ready to go, go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell Radio Show. It's me, Joe Thrashenkill. We got a full house today. First up on the mic, I got the golden boy, the internet sweetheart. I'm talking, of course, about 365 Days of Horror, or as we like to call him, Jordan. Jordan, how you doing?
Doing okay. A little bit of a chilly willy this weekend, but otherwise fine.
Well, that's good to hear, my friend. Hey, you're not alone, though. We've also got the big man on the mic. I'm talking, of course, about Brennicide. Brenno, how are you?
I don't care how chilly it is. When you talk about my willy, it's never little. Oh, yeah, I'm all right. That's okay.
We've been talking about this for like 5 years. We do need a soundboard. We need a soundboard so I can do like boing and like ooh sound effects.
I've been playing with that a little bit. Like I definitely like to throw in the little edits here and there. I every time I do, the listeners appreciate it. So I don't know. I'll keep it going. Might as well. I'll come up with some bullshit for this one.
I mean, it would be helpful like in the moment though for like us to be able to press buttons, you know, like a fart sound effect, a gunshot sound effect, a cash register sound effect.
We could just make people think that's the truth. I just go back and edit the episode anyway. Just because I drag and drop it doesn't mean that it's not on demand, you know?
Just that's hold true. Your phone up to the microphone and do that.
Yeah. I'm sure there's podcasts that do worse.
I mean, I've definitely done, on this show, like, the rap air horns with my phone.
Nah, man, I can just edit that shit in. Not a very busy week this week in terms of the metal world, and I'm getting a little tired of talking about Kid Rock. So he's not here this week, so we don't have to this week.
But it was a busy week for you personally.
Let's talk about it, shan't we? All right. So Friday afternoon, it's 1 o'clock. The thing about my job is that every day was a bad day. I was a team leader in a factory where I just oversaw what I was supposed to oversee was just 12 people building something on an assembly line, right? And it ended up me being in charge of more like 25 fucking people any given time because my supervisor wanted to do as little work as possible, so he would always say, "You're in charge of the department. It's you. It's all you. Okay. Well, you have more power than I do," and I was always fucking undermined to be reminded that was never the case. So, just always stressful, always too much fucking work. Every hour I was there was miserable. I hated my job, and I got myself set up with a new job, one that pays a lot better. Sounds like it's quite a bit of a better gig. Might be equal in terms of responsibility, but the company sounds like it's willing to invest a lot more in their employees, and I'm already getting a lot of that evidence. Like, they've already set me up with an email address. It took me fucking 2 months to get an email address at my current job, and they've already shown me how to log in like before I even got in the door. So
that's a red flag to me. It means that they expect you to do things, and I don't like that in a job.
Well, look, man, the red flags don't matter when you put on the rose-colored glasses of a certain kind of salary, if you know what I'm saying. So
I hear you.
I'll be miserable. You just got to fucking pay me for it. So
yeah, all jobs are bad jobs, but there are certain things that make them more bearable, like money.
And listen, I'm curious to hear about a job anyone has that isn't just like a red flag laden hellscape. They don't exist. It's not real. But anyway, so I was sitting there on a Friday. I'm during my lunch break eating some shitty fucking mac and cheese from the shitty cafeteria, feeling sorry for myself. Can't believe I got to wait another fucking month for this job. And then the new manager lady calls me. She says, "How would you like to start Monday?" I said, "Absolutely." I hung up the phone. I packed up my stuff regardless of the fact I had 2 hours left. I walked straight to HR. I said, "I'm signing my resignation right now so that you guys don't terminate me on a no call, no show. I want to resign formally here." I signed the piece of paper. I walked the fuck out without saying a word.
Did you eat the mac and cheese though? Did you finish it?
Unfortunately, I finished the mac and cheese before I got this phone call. So I had to shit it out immediately after. But besides that, I was very happy in that moment. I walked out of my 2 weeks notice. So actually my 1 month notice. I was going to give these fucking dirtbags an entire month of my time.
Oh, never, never do that.
Yeah. Never again, of course. No.
That's almost like a perfect, like a thing that everybody fantasizes about, like just walking in saying, fuck you, I'm done, walking out. The only downside is that you have to start a new job.
Of course. And the worst thing you can do really is like not make a scene. People don't realize that. They think it's time to stand on the guy's desks, put up middle fingers, hoot and holler. No, you just let them think. You let them wonder. That's the best thing you can possibly do. Leave them with the questions. That's how your vengeance becomes complete. So I did it. I fucking walked out. That was it.
Well, did it feel as good as you thought it would? It
felt better. I hadn't done that since I was like 19. I never thought I would get the chance to do that again. Like I said, I was told I wouldn't get this new job until the 28th. And here it was in my fucking lap, the, you know, after the weekend. I told the manager, I was like, listen, I'm going to disappoint a lot of people, but absolutely. Like, I'm not going to fucking not make more money in the hours I could be working at this new place just to do the right thing. Fuck the right thing. Fuck moral your moral compass is trash when it comes to work. Okay. Everything is professional. Nothing is personal. Don't ever let any job you have make you believe that there are personal actions you can take while employed at that job. There aren't. Put you first.
Jordan, have you ever walked out on a job?
Yeah, once or twice. No regrets.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done it a couple of times as well. I did it actually. I was working three jobs at the same time, and I quit two of them just by walking out the door and not saying anything. And that was like a hit of heroin. It was really nice.
Yeah, I fucking walked out. I was done. Fuck them. Fuck them. I don't care.
Well, I'd say that's a pretty big week. Pretty good. This is like one of the shittiest weeks I've ever had, just in terms of like, stress with shit that had to get done and, extreme weather events down here and stuff like that. But I made it through and everything is fucking golden from here on. Jordan, is everything all right on your angle?
Yeah. Nothing as dramatic as either one of you guys. I saw Nightmare Alley. Does that count as doing something?
So I saw that on one of the street, like the still on one of the streaming platforms the other day. What is that?
Yeah, I caught it on HBO Max. So that's probably where you saw it. And it's still in theaters, I think. I didn't know what to expect of it. I just knew it was Guillermo del Toro, who, you know, two thumbs up. That's cool. And it was a remake and also based on a novel and that sort of stuff. And for some reason, I have my toe dipping into like horror Twitter, you know, not all that much, but from my earlier days reviewing horror movies, and I saw a lot of people talking about it, and I think my brain just kind of assumed it was a horror movie just because these people are talking about it, and Guillermo del Toro has done some spooky things and I know is into that sort of stuff. It wasn't
right. It's like, what are you gonna do with a name like Nightmare Alley though? It just
Nightmare Alley and all these Guillermo things del Toro. I figured it was, but it's an old reference, which probably is about 100 years old at this point and wouldn't make sense to any of us, but yeah, overall good movie. Long, really long. Like you have to set aside your afternoon to watch it. It's 2.5 hours long.
That sucks. I hate how movies are all that length now. Like why everything has to be 3 hours in theaters. It sucks. Like give me the 90 minutes, man. Let me go home and think about it.
I finish all of my work like finally for the week last night at like 10:30 at night. I was like, fuck it, I've earned this. I want to sit down and I want to watch a movie and like pay attention to it, because that's like, I don't know, that's a pretty luxurious treat for me now.
Rare to come by for a lot of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm in nursing school right now, for anybody that doesn't know, and they didn't tell you this, but it takes up a lot of your time. So I was like, you know, I want to see something I'd never seen before. I wanted to watch Casino Royale. That came out like fucking 15 years ago. I heard a lot of great things. I never saw it. I was like, why not? I like Mads Mikkelsen. He's in this. Let's do that.
I have 3 hours to kill and I want to know all about poker.
But that's the thing. I didn't realize how fucking long Casino Royale is. So it's like, you know, 12:30 now, and I'm like, I'm so tired.
It's like anyway, that movie I wanted to see because it's like The Irishman. It's got all of the things I really want in a movie, all the actors and everything, but it's 3 fucking hours long, so I just won't sit down and watch it.
It's longer.
You
got to
watch it in installments.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. It's like The Godfather.
When that came out, I made 3 batches of soap during the runtime of that movie. So I didn't even pay careful attention to it, even though it was something like I was dying to see. I think my sense of attention is just fucking gone. I think that might be the case for a lot of us. So I was walking the dogs, listening to podcasts. I was catching the latest episode of the Riff Raff podcast. And I think that I heard those guys talking shit on us. I say I think because their mic quality is so shitty that I couldn't quite make it out. But I think they were coming for us.
We're talking about like the like that sort of cream vanilla color they used to have on all the computers. And you got that weird microphone on a stick. And you got the little Velcro you can attach to the side of your CRT monitor. It's one of those microphones, right?
And I think it might be one of those, like, you know, those gamer mics.
Oh, even better, where you got the fucking swivel on the side of your Logitech headset. Those are really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know exactly what it was they were trying to say, but I could detect some kind of coming at us.
Some vitriol.
Yes.
I think it's okay if they want to talk shit on the Riff Raff podcast, and you want to know why?
Why is that?
Because no one will hear it.
Fucking roasted, my boys.
They can punch up all they want, man. They can punch up all they want. That's how privilege works.
No, we love you guys. Everyone listen to the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. You do need better mics, though. That's the thing. Expense it. We'll make it work.
I might have talked some shit on Discord. Maybe that's my fault.
Oh, really?
Yeah, someone said... someone said something about how, you know, the Riff Raff podcast, the one that people actually care about. And I'm like, all 3 people?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We need to just start like really shit talking them and like heaping abuse on them on this podcast. Yeah. I think that's, you know, it's like the all exposure is good exposure. You know, if we just really start a flame war.
Show Thrash and Kill in 365 don't know shit about music. You heard it here first.
What? Good talk. What?
Well, I think that we could, you know, snipe back and forth, like, at our own Toilet of Hell podcast, back and forth all we want. Or we could make fun of maybe the funniest podcast I can think of. Are you familiar with The Porcupine?
You're already laughing when it came out of your mouth. I've never heard of The Porcupine. What is it?
Do you know, like, I wouldn't blame you for not knowing this. Did you know that the porcupine was the mascot of the Libertarian Party?
I would have assumed it was the rattlesnake. Why would it be the porcupine all of a sudden? Oh, don't tread on me. I fucking get it. That sucks.
It's don't tread on anyone is what they say.
Their slogan, gotta go fast.
Why would you go from a fucking... rattlesnake, hard-ass Benjamin Franklin-ass rattlesnake to a porcupine, dopey-ass, fedorable fucking beaver covered in quills.
I don't know. I think that there is the all of American libertarians are like on Reddit, and there's not that many of them, so I assume that it's some kind of, like you were saying, Sonic the Hedgehog-esque fandom.
Now, a hedgehog and a porcupine are two very different creatures, okay? I do not want to insult the biologists. I do not want to insult the biologists on this show. I mean, a porcupine is like 30 times the size of a hedgehog.
Well, they couldn't use Gary Glitter as their mascot, so they went with that.
Okay. Jesus Christ. So, the reason I bring up the porcupine is because an old friend we haven't talked about in quite some time appeared on episode 34 of the Pokemon podcast. The Porcupine podcast. Talking, of course, about old Philly Labonte from All That Remains.
What if I paid nothing to the police or fire crew? No more social security. No more public school. Fixing every pothole would be up to me and you. And I'd fill all of your holes, girl, if I had no taxes due.
He went on a libertarian podcast to discuss Spotify. And if you want to hear the most cucked thing you've ever heard in your life, listen to two libertarians talk about how they're getting fucked over by a bigger party and they can't do anything about it.
The inherent problem here is that Spotify has no government backing. They aren't even like a government department in America. So I don't see why it would be the source of subject on a libertarian sort of front. I don't see where the connection is there.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that business can do whatever it wants, and that's good. That means that we have a free market outside of governmental interference and malfeasance and crony capitalism. That capitalism I don't like.
Yes, Spotify is definitely has the freedom to do a lot of things, as shown by how much they just all the time get away with.
Yeah, if folks want to listen to the Patreon bonus show that me and Jordan did, we got into a little bit. You know, there are some details about Spotify you can learn. Like, for example, all of the major record labels have pretty huge stakes in it, so they're able to just, you know, wet their beaks no matter what. Their artists can go fuck themselves. It's been a source of bad feelings for a lot of artists, especially recently. We can get into that a little bit later. Let's talk about their relationship with All That Remains specifically. Jordan, do you want to maybe carry us on this one? You showed us this story.
I fucking knew you were going to do this. You do this all the time.
Did you have the article
I
up?
I something up, and then I don't have it in front of me. And
I've got it in front of me right now. I've got it. You wanted some more time on the mic.
Yeah, man.
Nah, it's all right.
All right, I'll do it. I'll say what wants to be said here. I will speak on behalf of Phil, because Phil and I were from the same area. We might as well be good buddies. We used to play in the same building as far as practice space was concerned. I don't know if you guys know that. I keep bringing it up.
So, how tall is Phil IRL?
Four foot six, seven? Yeah. He's a little munchkin, man. So in an interview published in July 2020, you know, this is to kind of prime things. Eck told Music Ally, even today, and this is Daniel Eck, the CEO of Spotify, not Phil Labonte. He says, even today on our marketplace, excuse me, what am I thinking? Even today on our marketplace, there's literally millions and millions of artists. What tends to be reported are the people that are unhappy, but we very rarely see anyone who's talking about it. In the entire existence of Spotify, I don't think I've ever seen a single artist saying, I'm happy with all the money I'm getting from streaming, stating that publicly. In private, they have done that many times, but in the public, they have no incentive to do it. But unequivocally, from the data, there are more and more artists that are able to live off streaming income in itself.
Name one. That's my challenge to you. Spotify CEO Daniel Eck, name one.
There is a narrative fallacy here combined with the fact that, obviously, some artists that are used to do well in the past may not do well in this future landscape where you can't record music once every 3 to 4 years and think that's going to be enough. That's all I need to hear from Daniel Eck. I'm getting a little tired of that accent. So, Daniel Eck kind of coming out swinging here, right? He's saying, the reason you guys aren't successful is because you think you can put out an album every 3 years, and just in the Spotify landscape that I created by myself, that's not possible.
Yeah, I do like, this isn't the first time that we've seen this particular quote from Daniel Eck, like the implication that, you know, musicians are lazy because they only put out music once every 3 or 4 years or whatever. Like, you know, the hallmark of quality music is putting out lots of it.
Right.
Just isn't that right, Psycho Center?
Yeah. Bob McCobb is rolling in streaming dough.
Don't you think Psycho Sinner could have at least broken that, all those releases up every 2 months, maybe? Just instead of flooding the marketplace with I'm Dumb 1,000 times over. So anyway, you know, Phil Labonte.
We're not seeing his Spotify checks. Maybe that worked out well for him.
I guess. Maybe. It was a very obvious way to go at it if he had actually made some success for him somehow, but who knows? Phil Labonte offered his take on X comments during a recent appearance on the Porcupine podcast. On the Pokemon podcast, he said that he is not a fan of Spotify personally. Phil explained that the streaming giant doesn't pay artists, quote unquote, well for hosting their music on the platform. And Daniel Ek made some snide remark about, he's like, musicians need to understand it's not a thing where you put a record out every 2 years and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you can be the person that came up with a creative destructive force, and that's fine. And that's part of a free market and stuff. But when you're a dick about it, you're still a dick. If you're just like, well, you guys have got to adapt to the market, it's like, look, there are a lot of artists there in contracts that can't just put out music every couple of days. Thankfully, I'm almost out of my contract. I've got one more record and we're recouped. So I'm in a uniquely good position. Not uniquely, but an exceedingly rare good position. Most artists aren't. So when he is so dismissive of the effect his creation has on the music industry, and then to glibly act as if 0.0007 cents for every spin is fair, I don't think that's, at the very least, it's not someone that I want to hang out with or someone that I want to speak positively of. Maybe it's not illegal, maybe it's not immoral, but I'm kind of just, well, you're kind of a pile, and I wouldn't want to be your friend. Now, I want to note here that I didn't give Phil Labonte a special accent because he comes from my area, and being a stupid Western Massachusetts mushmouth, that's me already, so I figured I'd just give you guys
the accent.
Yeah, I'd give you guys the authenticity just straight from the cuff.
So this is what happens when you burn a libertarian, like, from a business sense. They're just like, well, I can't do anything about it, but I don't like you.
We can't be friends, even though you're legally robbing me.
Why talk about it on the Libertarian Pokemon podcast at all? Why?
So, I mean, this just says to me, if you're a confidence man and you need to run a scam, libertarians seem like the right pigeons to pluck here. What are they going to do? Say that they're not going to invite you to their birthday party?
Market freedom. No, not like that.
Do you think that all that remains is recouped, like, based on the last several records from whatever horrible deal they got with the record label?
They were a very, very big band at once. There was a lot of money to be made in that camp, and I know they brought in the guitarist that used to be in Chelsea Grin, Jason Richardson, I think his name is, and he's very, like, YouTube famous. He's like a big gear guy because his playing is just that perfect. So, like, I don't know, maybe all of those things combined meant good things in the end for All That Remains. And they just kind of got in at that exact point where things were just about to become impossible to make money. Cause even still, even in my area, if you go around and you mention All That Remains, just like random people on the street, you're probably going to have to talk to like 10 or 20 before you get a guy who's like, oh yeah, my cousin's dating that guy from that.
I mean, like, I know what to look for a guy that might listen to All That Remains.
yeah, but it's just, they're not that huge in the grand scope of metal music, even. They're just, you know, they were successful once upon a time. They're certainly not anymore.
They had a little bit of that Guitar Hero money. And I think you just have to look at lineup changes and see, have they had people come and go, or have they stayed pretty much the same? And that's a good indicator of if they're making money or not. And I think they've had a decent amount of turnover over the past couple of years. Not like Rings of Saturn turnover, but, you know, enough where it's just like, man, I don't need to keep playing bass for this band.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes your guitarist leaves, you got to replace them. Sometimes your bass player leaves. Sometimes your wife leaves you. It's just, you know, it's all up in the air.
Sometimes you desperately try to join other more popular bands and you fill in for them for a week or two. And then they just say, all right, thanks, buddy. See you later.
I think it's awesome that Bad Wolves decided to go with some totally other Western Massachusetts rando.
Like a guy isn't even known for singing. That's so fucking funny.
They're just like, maybe we've had enough, like, conservative conspiracy theory cuckhead for, like, one band career. Let's just go a different route this one.
Just doing the Arthur meme with the tiniest little hand you've ever seen. But yeah, it's good to check in on old friends. So I'm happy to see that that's how things are going over on that end of the spectrum.
Yeah, God bless him. Yeah, moving forward, is there any other potential chuds in the metal scene we want to bring up this week? We've got a few actually, I think, that might be relevant in chuddom.
I mean, yeah, we do. It's like all the shit that's going on right now is kind of like a well-earned reckoning with streaming for a variety of reasons. I do want to just bring up this the screenshot that I saw online and shared with y'all. It's a headline from Metal Sucks. It just says, Spotify removes Joe Rogan episode with Tool's Maynard James Keenan over racial slurs.
Which, before we started recording, you said like 70 episodes were taken off of Spotify because Joe Rogan just can't stop saying the N-word.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, there's like over 1,000 episodes of the Joe Rogan podcast experience, Good Time Family Jug Band. But like, that's a pretty big hit rate, I would say. I don't think that even we say slurs that often on this show.
I feel like if you took off all of those times we've said a slur, maybe 5, and I was prominently featured.
I don't know. What's our slur ratio on the show, Jordan?
Marmaladinger is a big one. If we get all the Marmaladingers taken off, we're in trouble.
We did do an entire episode dedicated to slurs against like different European white people.
Your hatred for Italians is well known.
That's true. It's true. Anyway, I haven't really dug into this too much. Somebody posted a clip of Rogan with Greg Fitzsimmons, who I remember seeing do a Comedy Central special in like 1997 that I, as far as I still know, is being rerun to this day. are you guys familiar with that guy?
Not really. I mean, Comedy Central has like 11 comedians.
Yeah.
They've just kind of run to the ground over and over over the course of the last 30 years. And it's always just like 6-year-old HBO specials of the same fucking set of guys.
I remember thinking that Greg Fitzsimmons was very, very funny, but I was 10 years old. So, you know, take that for what you will. It seems he struggled to adapt to the marketplace of ideas, not really making it as much as a performer nowadays. I think he's mostly a writer. So I was watching this clip and, you know, like I've seen all kinds of equivocation online about like, you know, you don't know the context of all of this stuff, but at least in this particular thing, it was them talking about how the N-word has a pretty strong stigma to it and that it makes people mad. So let's go ahead. Let's just go ahead and say it.
And I'm sure over 70 episodes that pretty much was the thing. I mean, you've seen people recently get in a lot of trouble just for like saying how bad the N-word is and how you shouldn't say the N-word, but they just were saying that while trying to convey that point.
It's really dealing with children and impulse control, right? Like, I'm not supposed to fucking draw on the wall with crayon, so I want to do that more than anything I've ever wanted to do in my life.
Right. It's like the moment you're done being grounded for 2 weeks, the first thing you do is pick up that fucking box just to tell mom what for.
Yeah, fuck you, mom.
Ground me for 3 weeks, bitch.
That's what this is to me. Like, I don't think it's like a brave truth telling thing. I think it's just really poor impulse control. I could be wrong on that. Jordan, do you have thoughts?
No, I do not.
Sometimes you just got to leave Jordan alone.
I just keep poking at him today. I'm sorry, Jordan. So anyway, a bunch of episodes are getting stripped down. I just think, you know, I don't care enough to listen to a 4-hour episode of the Joe Rogan podcast experience or whatever. If you go to YouTube, you can probably find the episode with Maynard James Keenan and find whatever stimulating intellectual conversation was going on over there, but you can't find it on Spotify anymore.
You can just go onto YouTube and it'll recommend it for you without even having to look it up.
That's true. Yeah.
So I was listening to Tool recently, and man, this music's fucking crazy, man. You're gonna, you know, I've just smoked DMT and listened to Tool, and you know, I heard that that's really good for the protein in your body.
You a pretty good Rogan.
Thanks, Joe.
We all need to step up our game. Like, you've got Rogan, you've got Louis Anderson.
Welcome to the Toilet of Hell podcast. Welcome, this is Joe Rogan.
I don't know, man. They're fucking dumbasses from California. How hard is it?
I got to practice. I got to start, you know, I got to start recording myself and seeing what I can put down.
And I still haven't made myself a career in voice acting. I could do clips of the podcast, put that shit out on Fiverr. But I got Massachusetts Mushmouth. How cruel is it that they named our state Massachusetts? That's horrible. Like, I got everything. We just go, I'm from Mass. Yeah, that's all we can say.
I lost my place in this.
we're done with the Joe Rogan experience here. You know,
a bunch of people have been pulling their music off of Spotify because Joe Rogan is a dipshit and they gave him a ton of money, which is fine and all. Like, I think that initially this was Neil Young, a guy that's got fuck you money, saying like, this is stupid. I don't want to be on the same platform as this asshole, so I'm gone. Some other people with fuck off money did the same thing. And I think now it's kind of morphing into a thing where people that don't have fuck off money are like, well, yes, Joe Rogan sucks. You gave him like $250 million and you're paying me 7 cents per, 10 million plays on this. So I don't want to be here on here either.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's getting a little bit bigger than just like Joe Rogan is a dipshit who, you know, it is just the most credulous man online.
Absolutely. And I think the elephant in the room is that the streaming economy just simply doesn't work. If you got to have everybody accessible on one platform, all of the millions and millions of artists, the only ones who Spotify at all is going to have money to give is going to be the major artists that get like 10 billion streams on some of these huge global hits, right? And so they kind of have to keep that in mind, and then they pay your average blackened noise grind project the exact same per stream as they would Justin Bieber. And maybe those numbers are just not quite adding up for one party rather than the other. So where do we go from here? You know, I mean, even if we get even if everybody moves from Spotify, you're just going to go to what, Tidal, Apple Music. Maybe people get paid 0.006 cents instead of 0.007. There's really no way for this to work. So who fucking knows, man? I don't know what's next.
Well, I think that a lot of people are in the same boat. They're looking at this and they're like, well, as we've built it, the streaming economy, it doesn't really work for anybody except for, you know, the people at the very, very top. They're making, you know, money hand over fist, and it doesn't work. We're not able to trickle down at this moment, maybe a little bit later. So we got to find ways to work around it. We got to find workarounds to make a little bit of extra money for, you know, artists, you know, because they need a little bit of pocket money for strings and pizza and beer and drugs and things like that. Sure. And then we need to make a lot of money for ourselves as well.
Right. That's the goal here. But yes. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that you're not really taking much of a stand if you have 14 monthly listeners and you're letting everybody know on, Instagram that you're 17 and a half followers, that you're just pulling your music from Spotify. Like, good on you, pal.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a way to, you know, monetize perhaps a little bit for smaller artists, for larger artists, for mid-sized artists. Why not every artist? As a matter of fact, like, we can find a way to make you a little bit of dough. And, you know, don't concern yourselves with how much that is. We'll send it to you. And it'll
probably
help.
Probably. Yeah. We say we're going to send it to you, so you'll definitely.
We don't even have
money
to tell you that we're doing this.
No.
Yeah. I mean, are you going to turn down a check showing up in the mail? Do you not want money?
Yeah. What do you need permission for free money?
Yeah. Hey, it's free money.
I'm just thinking of the guy from those infomercials that used to wear the Riddler jacket running around
Matthew
Washington,
Lesko.
D.C.
I fucking love that guy.
Free!
I went to school with his son.
The guy who sounds that. Like Andy Dick but isn't Andy Dick, and who Andy Dick made fun of on his TV show on MTV 20 years ago.
And I would absolutely side with Matthew Lesko over Andy Dick any day of the week.
I would side with that guy over what we're about to talk about any week. I would think that money scheme is much more lucrative on his side of things than whatever we're about to talk about.
All right. Jordan, take it away.
Well, the other guy would be more lucrative because he sold you an actual book, a physical thing that you could hold in your hand and look at. Whereas,
like, it doesn't matter that, like, that book is just stripped from, like, the government websites. Like,
it's just public knowledge. But the point is, you could hold it.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It's not what this website Hitpiece did, which is sell music-related NFTs without telling any of the bands or their labels or anyone involved in this that they were doing it.
And I wonder who collects on the other side of that. Like, who was spending $100,000 on any given one of these quote unquote NFT? What the fuck was the NFT actually? Was it the music? Was it the album cover? I don't even understand.
Both. I mean, okay. Does it really matter? It's not a real thing to begin with. It's saying, like, hey, okay, you like this band. Give us between $100,000 and $100,000, and you own whatever, some esoteric piece of it on the blockchain. We'll give you a fucking receipt for it. It's not a real thing. It's just numbers that don't exist. I noticed this, I guess, last weekend. Was that when you first started seeing it?
Yeah, it was like kind of just after we were recording, honestly, that it came up, which was unfortunate because it would have been a great thing to talk about right then and there. But it was what it was, right? So I went through it, and it seemed to me, just going through all the tweets and going through all the backlash, every single possible artist and album that was featured, I think specifically on Spotify, ended up on this website. Every single one of them. Didn't matter if you had 200 listens or 200 billion listens. It was all there.
Not all of them. I did see a couple of homies online saying, like, wow, I actually feel bad that I didn't make the cutoff on this.
And that was me. And I was wondering why. And it was just because, you know, I guess I took a stand before it was cool when it came to Spotify. And I didn't, you know, I quit the band before we did what we wanted to do, which was end up on Spotify.
So, but yeah, I mean, aside from a couple of small acts, like every band was on here. Like, were all of your bands on this, Jordan?
All of my bands were on this.
I'm gonna buy all of Jordan's band's NFTs.
I will just give you a CD for. I've done it before. I've given you CDs. You can hold the artwork in your hand.
No,
if you want.
I want it on the blockchain.
I would get a sticky note and say, Brandon owns this 01010011.
But it's a piece of paper, and that's not modern enough.
I'll take a picture of the piece of paper.
Will you send it to me on a phone?
Yes, I will send it to you on a phone.
And will you write in the digital description of the image, if you right click on it and I go in Windows, it has all this information in the photograph?
Sure.
I'll think about it.
Okay. So a lot of people got pretty mad about this because, you know, some fucking guy nobody's ever heard of just takes your shit and puts it up for sale, right?
Right. And there's nothing tied to you or your account or your label or anybody. There's nothing. There was no intent or connection there whatsoever to get that money to the hands of the people that it was owed to.
Yeah, it's like some guy raiding my fridge and, like, putting a price sticker on my Greek yogurt. Like, don't do that. That's mine. a lot of people were, you know, rightly incensed by this, calling it a scam, a grift, saying that, you know, these people are stealing from them. And I would like to make something pretty clear if it's not already. Absolutely zero NFTs were sold from this. From whatever this fucking thing is, nobody wants this, right?
this pissed people off across all genres. This wasn't just metal bands that were mad about it. This wasn't just rock band. Everyone who saw their stuff on there was extremely pissed off, except for maybe Atari Teenage Riot.
Yeah.
The irony.
Yeah, Atari Teenage Riot, they've really taken a heel turn in these last few weeks.
Like, if you go to their Facebook page now, they are in the comments section, which you should never do. Mm-mm. And I'm pretty sure it's Alec Empire, the guy who does Atari Teenage Riot, the main guy, just going at it with fans saying, like, this kind of sucks. Like, no, this is the future. This is going to decentralize governments if I sell you this thing that doesn't really exist. So their stuff was on this website, too.
Yeah, but I think that they might actually be a little bit miffed about that because they have their own channels for selling their fake non-product.
Right. That made no sense to me why they were in support of this. They were the one party I saw.
I was kidding with their support.
Oh, see, I don't know things. I don't know, man. Like, is there any benefit? Can band is this just what music's gonna be now? Like, every time an album gets sold, you can own the album for 100,000 Ethereum if you want. Like,
some bands are already doing this. Like, I think Less Than Jake is one of those first bands that are doing it, which whatever. Jake. But like, even Tony Hawk is doing this stuff now. Yeah. It's also some big celebrity pyramid scheme that's going on, and people are starting to dig into this and find out who's actually behind it. And it's all bullshit. We know it's been bullshit for a while, but now it's starting to affect people who don't want any part of it. I mean, myself included. I don't want to be involved in any of this nonsense. And this hit piece group of actual industry insiders, people who have worked within the music industry, have had their little scam come out, trying to rip off bands with some sort of weird promise of, oh, we'll give these bands money if we sell anything. And I think they're even promising, like, FaceTime with some of these bands to, like, connect with people who are buying them, which, again, is never agreed upon by anyone involved in any of this. And, it's really shitty for everyone involved.
All right. And I guess the point I can make after you saying all that is, like, if Hit Piece wanted to do this barely the correct way, they would have put out some kind of statement, or they would have had some kind of marketing campaign where they're like, hey, bands that want to be involved in this bullshit, labels that want to be involved in this bullshit, let us know, and we'll put the album up on our site for people to buy as an NFT. And of course, that's stupid, but bands are doing it anyway. And hey, there's this really kind of easy, transparent way to do it. They could have had something legitimate on their hands, but they failed and they screwed the pooch so fucking hard on this one. I just don't know how they assumed that the way they were going was totally okay.
The
theory behind that, at least some people have posited it, is that they knew that they were going to have DMCA takedowns and get in trouble for this, but it was essentially free press to get the idea out there that you can do this and to somehow entice major labels, like, this is the future, and getting it on that ground floor, which, personally, I think that's a nice conspiracy theory. I don't think that's the case, because they managed to upset a lot of people, including, like, the Recording Industry Association of America.
Right. We're talking about, like, the big dogs here. You guys got off on the wrong foot right away. Like, right off the get-go, all you did was piss everybody off, and everyone was so happy to see your URL taken down, which did happen, right? We saw that, like, the website was essentially shut down immediately after all this stuff came out. So,
well, enough people filled out DMCA, like, claims on this shit, and rightfully so, that it got stripped. My thought on this was that Hit Piece was not ready to launch. They were essentially building a front-end test case that they could present to Spotify and have this be an automated feature to roll in, get their company snapped up by Spotify, and say, like, hey, you know, it's free money for bands or whatever. Here's our process for integrating this with Spotify. You know, with One Piece, people can buy NFTs from the artists themselves. Here is every artist on your platform that we've used, you know, getting API access to your platform. Here's how it integrates. let's fucking go. Let's do this thing. Let's make some money. I don't know what happened along the way, but it made so many people so livid that it might have poisoned that forever, which case I would say that's actually super great.
So let me get into some updates here. So on February 1st, after all this, all of this clearly deserved bullshit, Hitpiece put out, honest to God, all of this was like they wrote a note in a phone and then screen capped the note and then put it on Twitter. They wrote, clearly we have struck a nerve and are very eager to create the ideal experience for music fans. To be clear, artists get paid when the digital goods are sold on Hitpiece. Like all beta products, we are continuing to listen to all user feedback and are committed to evolving the product to fit the needs of the artists, labels, and fans alike. And it's just, you guys didn't do anything. You didn't do fucking anything you needed to do to kind of preface this. And, you know, if Hitpiece was just like a beta site and all you guys were doing was just putting up everything that was on Spotify just to test out the website and nothing was actually taken and nothing was actually being sold, fine. But I think I saw some things actually getting sold as NFTs around places and artists like freaking out over that fact. So clearly this was like a scam to make very quick money right off the get-go. Now, if you go to hitpiece.com, the website is technically still down, but it's kind of within their control. It's all blacked out and it just simply says, we started the conversation and we're listening. And that's all it says.
It's not a conversation if you have hundreds of people screaming, fuck you.
Right. That's, if you're just like standing there in the center of an arena, pissing your pants and everybody's pointing and laughing, like that's not what I would call a conversation.
But I mean, this is not going away. If it's not Hitpiece, it's going to be something else where if you're an artist, I mean, nobody gives a shit about you. You're going to have your intellectual property just completely strip mined by somebody for some complete nonsense like crypto wash trading.
Right.
They're going to continue to, you know, abuse you and you don't have any say in this.
And here's kind of my major concern. I don't know if anybody remembers the video, Charlie bit my finger, Charlie, ouch. Okay. So that was sold as an NFT, like the original video. And then it was taken down from YouTube. So now, I mean, like, obviously, it has been re-uploaded a trillion times, so you're not going to have a problem finding the original video anywhere. But the actual original uploaded video on the original account is gone. It was sold as an NFT. Now, if I go and I buy Jordan's latest album as an NFT, and I buy it, and digitally it's mine, and it's in my possession that way, how is that going to be open for streaming wherever it's open for streaming? Like, isn't it now taken down and owned by me and my rights to it and everything?
I mean, none of this makes any sense.
Right. How does this work?
But like, it's not supposed to. It's nonsense. It's nonsense from top to bottom. It's just a poorly conceived scam. And the thing that I keep seeing about this, like, you know, Jordan, like you mentioned, with all the big celebs getting on Jimmy Fallon or whatever to fucking talk about their horrible ape drawings, it's just that they need more people to buy into this shit so that it can cash out, but nobody's buying it because it fucking sucks.
It's Herbalife, but on your computer.
Herbalife, at least I can get a buzz. I know it's a real thing.
Can you?
One of the things that we also have to consider just as fans is, and I think the EVE6 guy has gone into some tweets about this, not every band owns their music.
Right.
We talked about this on the Patreon podcast too. So we may start seeing some labels, especially some of the bigger ones, get in on this, producing weird NFTs of album covers and songs themselves and whatever else nonsense that they can make up. And our initial reaction might be getting mad at some of these bands and artists that are doing this thing that a lot of us don't like, and they might not have any control over it. Just personally speaking, I didn't upload any of my band's music onto Spotify. That's all been done by the labels. So technically, if some of the labels are into this, they could put up my music and my artwork from my bands onto whatever scam NFT thing that exists, and there's nothing I can do about that, really. I can't afford like paying some sort of lawyer to look into this stuff or to have the time to figure out DMCA takedowns and whatever else that entails with. Like, for extremely small artists, what do? You just kind of go, oh, that sucks.
And I think that's about it. I mean, you touched on an awesome point that I think eventually I could have gotten to, but I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself, right? And when you have this kind of weird money-making scheme involving people's beloved music, you're fucking up the goodwill between the artists and the fans. You're fucking up the goodwill between the label and the artist. You're fucking up the goodwill between the fans and the labels. And it just creates this huge mess where bands sign contracts with these labels like you did years ago, and nothing like this was involved in these contracts. Like, no one would have known that NFTs were coming 5 or 6 years ago, or as long as a lot of these contracts last. So I definitely see what you're saying coming. You're going to see people giving backlash and canceling artists that had no creative control of what's happening with their music. You're going to see them pleading with fans in the aftermath saying, hey, we had nothing to do with this and it's all our label. And then there's going to be that beef between the artist and the label. You're going to see all sorts of like people dropping from labels left and right over this shit. It's nothing but bad news from here on out.
I think the further thing is that nobody wants to buy this shit.
Yeah.
It really is just a small group of people that are trying to pump up the value of something that is inherently valueless. It's shitting into the air. That's it.
Right.
And it's the tub girl of business.
Absolutely.
And one of the worst things you can do is try to cater to the wealthiest upper class in America. And that's all NFTs do. That's why you were saying there's only like 400 something Coinbase wallets that actually have some investment in NFTs. Nobody is buying this shit, especially right now with the economy being the way it is, like lower class,
in this economy,
upper middle class, man, it's just no one can afford to buy some fucking monkey farting in its own mouth, like on like a digital front that's worth $1 trillion in some cryptocurrency that could be worth -$1 trillion the next day. No one is fucking with this stuff. And so music is universal. If you fuck with people's goodwill on this, you're going to have a bad time. If you try to cater to people that there's only a percentage of in the nation with this kind of money, if you just try to go for that money and get the quick money bag and you turn your backs on everybody else, you're going to have a fucking bad time, man. Your pizza's when you should have French fried. It's going to be a bad time.
I think it really is kind of symptomatic of the economy at large, where all that's left is fucking around on the margins with nothing. Like, you're not building anything that's useful. You're not like investing in a technology that would help somebody in any way. You're just trying to get a big stack of cash as quickly as possible out of just really absolutely nothing. It's an MLM. That's really all this is. So I respect you more if you sell LuLaRoe, if you're bothering everybody on your Facebook friends list with Scentsy, I have more respect for you than if you're trading in whatever the hell this shit is. It's real anyway.
It's nasty.
At least tulips were pretty.
They are.
So anyway, I hope nothing but bad things happen to all these people, especially Rory Felton, the CEO of Hitpiece. If you attended the Warped Tour back in the day, as we all did, you might be familiar with his prior work. He formed the Militia Group in the late 90s that had a shit ton of bands on it that likely gave you a CD in the parking lot of the Warped Tour. I know that I had a few of these, and I certainly didn't pay for them. Do you remember Slick Shoes?
I don't remember any of these things.
Let's see. There was also Rufio. Do you fucking remember Rufio?
I remember Rufio.
Yeah, that shit all sucked. This is what that fucker's up to now. Just the lowest tier of pop punk in the early 2000s is now coming at you financial scam style. Just
pissing off Wolfgang Van Halen.
I do like Wolfgang Van Halen. He seems like a fun guy.
So he does, and good for him, man. I feel bad about what he's gone through with his dad and everybody being a piece of shit about it. You guys remember when like the needle drop guy Anthony Fantano was talking shit about how Eddie Van Halen died from smoking cigarettes? Like, none of your fucking music snob friends are outside smoking cigarettes talking about music that sounds like shit on purpose. Fuck you.
He doesn't have any IRL friends.
Fair enough. But look, I mean, we got on all this concept of just like these upper class motherfuckers just trading everything with NFTs and just doing shit that it's way beyond anything that the rest of us are capable of. Let's segue into something that's still somehow within that bullshit. On Friday, this last Friday, late Pantera drummer Vinnie Paul's house was for sale. Okay? It was up for sale. Do you guys remember how much it was? It wasn't exorbitant. I mean, it was a lot of money, but it wasn't more money than like a really nice house in my area. I think it was like worth $750,000. Something along those lines.
This is a story that has been everywhere in my DMs. People I know in Texas that are like, dude, let's go in on this.
So it was for sale. Now, the Avenged Sevenfold frontman, M. Shadows, he had the zany idea of buying it using NFTs and turning it into a Pantera museum. And then you had the Attila frontman, Chris Fronczak. These are like all my favorite people in one paragraph. It's amazing. Since then, Attila frontman Chris Fronczak tweeted that he tried to buy it, but he couldn't. It was already bought. Do you guys know who bought the Vinnie Paul house?
Yeah, just imagining Franz giving a house an STD.
Five Finger Death Punch.
I was meeting with my real estate agent all week.
Five Finger Death Punch bassist Chris Cale bought the house. I'm talking dreadlock beard. That guy bought Vinnie Paul's old house.
The fucking Pirates of the Caribbean guy is buying the house that I wanted to live in. It's not fair. Did you guys take a look at this house? Because I did the video tour and everything.
Yeah, how did it look?
Man,
the outside is hideous.
It's bad. That's the thing about this house is that it's bad.
It's like big time McMansion vibe.
Yeah, my favorite, like, the toilet paper roll-looking things on the exterior that are covered in that brick glass shit that was at your favorite Kmart pizza place. Like, it's just, it's a bad house. It was gaudy and shitty when it was built, and now it looks old and gaudy and shitty.
I thought it could have been worse, to be honest.
So what you're saying is, like, so it's, like, gaudy and shitty even for the standards of the time frame of which it was built, and who knows when that was.
It was
right?
built in 1995. You know, and you're dealing with, a party type Texan dude who's like, let's make a house classy.
A bald eagle just flew by my window.
There we go.
So yeah, that's just means something. We really mean something to how American this whole conversation is. We're talking about fake money, monopoly money on the internet, being used to buy the house of a dead drummer from a racist band, and just trying to be bought out by all of these other guys who have said the N-word on stage every night. And it's just good vibes all around here.
Well, I hope that Chris Kyle, whatever his name is, has fun with this, because I did take a close look and there is definitely foundation damage on this bitch.
Maybe he can flip it. Maybe he can get it off his hands. And, you know, that's probably the move here, right? Is just buy the house and just tear it all down and then get some like one story ranch with two bedrooms that you can sell for like $1.5 million. Like I saw in Austin over the weekend.
Yeah, the economy is fake and it sucks. The real estate market is even worse than NFTs.
Why do people want to make Pantera museums? It just seems like such a odd idea. I know we've talked about the whole limo, you know, make it a touring museum sort of deal, and now people want to do this with his house. Why bother? What are you going to do? Look at some guitars and smelly spandex?
And I wonder if you have some sort of scheme here where you have a Pantera museum. I mean, is that money going to go to any Pantera estate, or is that all getting pocketed by your Jose Mangans and such?
I assumed it was like a tax-free way to have some passive income. I don't know if museums have to pay taxes the same way that like a normal business does.
You could probably make a lot of money doing an Airbnb with Vinnie Paul's place, selling it out to metalheads with a little bit too much money.
Coming to Western Massachusetts, Brendan's used dildo museum.
There are a lot of ways that you could try to scheme off the corpse of a popular dead musician. I think that, you know, just fucking around with his old belongings, that's just one thing that you can do. If you could like find a way to, you know, create like a hologram of that person and like just rent them out as a butler, that would be a great one as well.
Yeah, you could do like the Dio hologram NFT.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an NFT and it's a hologram, but it's also like programmed so it has to serve you.
Some sort of horrible cameo / NFT / hologram where they're forced to talk to you.
Dio, go shopping for me in the fucking metaverse.
The future is bright.
Death is not the end, especially if someone owns the rights to you.
I hope when I die, I can be uploaded to the metaverse.
Yeah, what are you going to do in the metaverse?
I don't know, probably just like steal everybody's music and try to sell it as an NFT.
You know it's all going to be sex related.
I just didn't want to say it out loud. You know, it's a family show.
People are going to fill you out like an application.
Yeah.
I'd be excited to get into the metaverse and, you know, recreate that scene from The Matrix where you got, you know, shelves full of guns flying right past you. But I think as soon as the novelty of that wore off like 20 or 30 times later, I'd probably be like, oh, I wish I could actually die.
It's like I could start an OnlyFans account now, but why not wait until, you know, after I shed this mortal coil and forever exist digitally in the metaverse? You know, now there's really no moral fiber to have to be considered here. I could just do what I want.
I think really the solution to all of our problems is like EMT, like EMP. Yeah, an EMP. That's the solution.
I was going to say the solution to all our problems is DMT.
Now, I think if we take down all of the networks, all of the internet, all of the racks of fucking crypto mining equipment in one fell swoop, we can get back to things that really matter.
Yeah.
And artists can get back to making money the way that they were supposed to, playing songs around campfires with people drinking flagons of mead or whatever the fuck.
Or just like other racks on the internet.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do we have any good news? Creator announced a new album and their first single is really good.
I have not heard it yet. Is it really good?
Yeah, it's Creator. You know, it's just like a German thrash band.
It's German thrash.
It's just been doing what they've been doing. If you like German thrash, you're going to like it. It's just Creator, aside from like one goofy album, they've been pretty like boringly consistent. So if you like that.
Will we get in trouble if we play that on this one?
We have already skirted so much trouble in terms of like DMCA takedowns. I don't even know if we can talk shit about something like Hit Piece.
Yeah, but we're not, whatever, fuck it. Let's just use somebody else's work for our own gain.
Yeah, all right, let's do a clip of Hate Uber Alice.
Bye.
All right, that was the clip. Hope you guys liked it. My Millie Petroza says everything is really loud and aggressive. The way we communicate has changed thanks to social media. It causes a lot of imbalance. The world is in a state of despair. I'm sorry, disrepair, not despair, just disrepair. Life is not harmonic right now. It's disharmonic. That's where I was going with the title. So Internet Bad. I love songs like that.
This is not a sandwich. It's a dis sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is maybe pretty well-trodden ground for bands, especially of a certain age. Things are pretty bad. The internet makes it worse. I can't say that I disagree.
I feel like if your band started 20 years ago, you don't have any good music anymore, and that's just kind of universal to everybody. You kind of already, if you've existed for that long, your best jams were already put out. Is there any examples of me being wrong about that, or
like bands that are getting better 20 years later?
Yeah. See?
Jordan, you got one, surely, right?
I think the only time you really have a good chance of that is when they just change styles and they just give up what they used to do. And they've just been around so long that they hit the 15, 20 year mark, but they're doing something new. Yeah, I don't know. It's like Dredge used to be a new metal band, and then 10 years in, just decided to make like pretty indie rock music.
Like you got two bands like Opeth and Mastodon, and their newer albums are just so insanely different from what they put out when they kind of first were hitting the you know, when they were first putting out major releases, that you can have totally different fans of music on other sides of those spectrums. So I can see what you're saying there. It's just like a different kind of musical appreciation.
It's like a different band.
Pretty much. So
just they happen to have the same name and sometimes have the same members, and now Mastodon and Opeth appeal to dads.
This is somewhat related, but not really. I don't know if you guys are fans of Godspeed You Black Emperor.
Not really. No. Well aware, but they're just not my vibe, man. They should be, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Like it's post rock. That's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit less straightforward than say your Explosions in the Skies and such.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this, but their first record, which they put together in like 1994, has been thought to be lost for ever since then. Like it would never appear again. Somebody just uploaded it to 4chan's music board the other day. Yeah, they put together their first record, was released on 33 cassettes, and nobody kept one, I guess, except for this one basement dweller.
It's always weird to me when band members like don't keep some of their own stuff. This isn't the first time we've heard something like this, where bands just don't have early demos, or they don't have maybe their first T-shirt they sold. Don't you want to keep that stuff just for, you know, you worked on this. Why don't you remember this song that you made?
Just sentimental value. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people don't have that attachment to things. They're like, well, I did it. Time to move on to something else. I don't have to think about that again. Even though, you know, you've got legions of fans like, please tell me you saved this in a box somewhere, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
But like, didn't you like put your heart into this even when you were doing it, or didn't it mean something to you at some point? Like, how do you just completely forget about stuff? Like, I understand if you've been around for 50 years, yeah, you can't remember every song you've done, but still something. I don't know. Your mom didn't hold on to it for you in a little keepsake box with like a lock of your baby hair.
Well, that's kind of an interesting conversation, because like I very recently at my mom's house, I found like a folder of all my old high school art, and it made me cringe pretty bad, a lot of it. Like, a lot of the stuff I thought was really cool, like medieval dudes just covered in spikes and stuff.
Invader Zim.
Yeah, right. So, and I'm not that guy anymore. So I wonder if when it comes to early demos and stuff, like, bands saw this stuff as the same sort of way. It's like, you know, this was good practice as being a band and getting our chemistry together, but we just weren't there yet.
I think in the case of Godspeed You Black Emperor, it was lost. And by the time that anybody gave a shit, they were working on stuff that sounded more like what they wanted to make. So they were fine with it being gone. So it is a bit maybe like, yeah, I did that. Don't necessarily want to revisit it because I'm doing something cooler now. So fortunately, there's lots of you know, obsessive freaks out there in the world that can help find your lost shit for you.
That want to upload it to the worst website.
Again, like there's for that band, there's nothing more fitting than some neckbeard on 4chan, like finally unveiling this thing that people have been looking for almost 30 years.
and that's my thing is that, like, you know, Godspeed You Black Emperor, Explosions in the Sky, all that stuff is a little too Fantano for me. I just feel like there's just like certain music that just is kind of just a little too pretentious on purpose. So it's not my vibe. I'd rather just, like, you know, cruise down the highway to something I can bob my head to, I guess, because I'm a normie.
For what it's worth, I think that those two bands, despite being post-rock, are entirely different. Explosions in the Sky is the most normie post-rock band. I mean, they did the soundtrack for fucking Friday Night Lights.
maybe I'm getting them confused with someone else. Maybe I'm just thinking of Godspeed You Black Emperor.
Yeah, but it would be a much different vibe if if you had that band instead of, you know, the fun twinkly little guitars over, you know, the coach giving an inspiring speech about how you need to get out there and get CTE.
All right, boys, I think that's about time for us. Any other points we want to make before we get off? Anyone else see anything else?
Oh, hell no. I have nothing to say.
Good. That's the best kind of way to have a podcast. I suggest it. Don't start one. So, boys, girls, everybody else listening, love y'all. Keep it metal. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
What if I paid nothing to the police or fire crew? No more social security. No more public school. Fixing every pothole would be up to me and you. And I'd fill all of your holes, girl, if I had no time.